The following presentation was recorded at Faith Builders. More information on Faith Builders events at fbep.org.
I'd like to begin this afternoon by reading to you an email that came in to Brother David from a Brother Dan Leichty. I'm not sure if I'm saying that correctly or not. L-E-I-C-H-T. Lichty. Okay, Dan Lichty, via Joel Nafziger. And I'll just read a few words from it, not the entire thing. The background of this is, apparently Dan is a fairly liberal Mennonite because he is citing a film that was on television, I'm assuming, about the Amish. And commenting on it because he obviously was ex-Amish, as you read this. The piece interviewed various ex-Amish who spoke about instances of sexual abuse, authoritarianism in the community structure, and there were some particularly wrenching scenes resulting from the practice of shunning. I found myself being needlessly defensive. Isolated incidences, I thought. Not typical. A hatchet job. Selective reporting. Sad, but perhaps necessary to maintain the community boundaries, and even chalking a few things up to the possible effects of inbreeding. In other words, I was doing everything I could to mentally and emotionally distance myself from these reports, to insist, in effect, that these certainly had nothing to do with me and mine. I'm a Mennonite. But then the reporter turned to an issue in which it was simply impossible to keep up that facade. The physical abuse of children. Liberal use of the rod as a teaching tool aimed at breaking the will of the child. Somehow defiance is the worst thing possible for an Anabaptist child, and parents are given sacred charge by God Him herself, and that's a quote from him, through generations of church leaders in the model of their parents, of course, to do whatever is necessary to break the child of all traces of defiance. There is no question that this philosophy of child rearing and discipline went on in my Mennonite community, in the school, in the church, in the homes of almost every friend I had, and in my own home as well. I can clearly remember myself and many of my friends being hit and humiliated by all manner of the God-fearing local authorities, in quotes, local authorities, basically in what can only be understood as an attempt to break our defiant will. Gott sei Dank, which I'm assuming is thank God. I think in my case they were at least only partially successful. But this still remains a subject about which we maintain a code of silence. I was myself reminded during this show of how absolutely indignant I was when I was first confronted with the notion that striking a child is itself a kind of abuse. Not because I wanted to hit children, but because it clearly placed the whole idyllic, happy as the grass was green notion of Mennonite upbringing into severe question. In watching this 2020 show last night, which I haven't the foggiest notion what a 2020 show is, but whatever it is, I was hit again with how deeply it is still within me, all these years later, to overlook or excuse that kind of treatment of children among our people, and how loath I am to be reminded that this went on and still goes on in our communities. I feel offended and defensive when 2020 points out to America the actions of our people. Gives a wrong impression. They don't understand the context. For which I would without hesitation report to authorities if I ran across it among regular people in my professional work. And I'm assuming he is perhaps a doctor from that statement. The ex-Amish interviewed on 2020 were quite clear as to why this type of child rearing goes on. A person who has not been trained by adulthood to be submissive and obedient to authorities is of no use to the Amish community, and is even a positive threat. Most of the other abuses that the show outlines, sexual abuse and the ability to keep this hidden, punishment for wanting higher education or questioning the bishops were rather directly related to the socialization dynamic of producing submissive and obedient adults. It was clear from this show that other children learn early on to almost ignore it when a sibling is being beaten or severely punished, like such treatment is natural and expected. Hardly a wonder that we Mennonites are so good at maintaining our silence by the time we reach adulthood. Indy goes on to say some more and ends up saying, I would appreciate reading the responses to this 2020 presentation from other of you out there. So if you feel like responding to this, you probably will have the opportunity. Now, I read this because my subject is disciplining out of a loving heart. And we have here a gentleman, Dan Lichty, who is, I think, from what I can tell, taking a position that one should never use the rod, that this apparently is always a form of abuse. Now, I'm not going to be centering on corporal punishment today, but this is just to set our minds in motion. I believe that what he has written ignores three very, very important facts. One of them is that the scriptures affirm the use of the rod. It affirms that this is a proper way to discipline a child. Now mind, I'm not going to get stuck on that point, but I just say, first of all, that it makes that affirmation in scripture. And who am I, or Dan Lichty, to say that this ought to be tabulated as pure abuse in our day? Secondly, he ignores the fact that when corporal punishment was still acceptable and practiced in general Western culture, juvenile delinquency was not nearly the problem that it is today. And some of these people who from the intelligentsia, I don't know why they don't apply some of their own scientific methods to these discussions. Why, statistically, you could see that something changed somewhere, and I just suggest this was at least a factor in that issue. And thirdly, in the focus of our discussion today, when the rod is wielded by a hand that is preceded and followed up by a loving heart, it is far from abuse. Rather, as the scripture says, it delivers the soul from hell. And so I don't want to get into a big critique of Brother Lichty's discussion, but it just struck me anew as I was studying for this lesson or this talk that people have come to the conclusion today that it apparently is impossible to discipline out of a loving heart. And so they go on to this abuse thing and so on. We want to focus on this issue of a loving heart. And that's what I'm presenting to you as the missing factor that this brother didn't really want to or didn't address. You know as well as I do that there are multitudes of Mennonite and non-Mennonite families out there that have practiced using the rod over the years very effectively and trained and taught children very, very well by doing that. I'm very sorry about the cases where that was not, where there was abusive situation. But I don't believe that was the rule. I believe that was just the exception where you saw that. My father gave me paddlings. I'll say that quite frankly in front of anybody. And they were good for me, and I don't hold one thing against him today for the use of the rod. It was very, very, very effective in my experience. Well, enough said now about the rod issue. That's probably the most visible form of discipline that we see and that we are aware of. But obviously we want to broaden the discussion of discipline to the other areas. Many, many, many ways in which we bring discipline to bear upon children, whether it be a student or our own children. I have just a simple definition. Any attempt, discipline is any attempt to curb the natural tendency toward carnality. Now, you may, look, just bringing a child into school and making them sit down and sit still and listen to you and pay attention and do their work is a form of discipline. That in itself is. You start to curb their natural tendency just to let go and do what they feel like doing, see. So you have forms of discipline anywhere from that mild, I guess, to the more severe forms of discipline when things get desperate and we might use the rod or some other form. So again, discipline is any attempt to curb the natural tendency toward carnality. And we, in our schools and in our homes, I trust, bring to that whole issue then a loving heart as we curb that carnality. Now, I suppose that you know that discipline is viewed negatively because in its various forms, whatever its form is, it always involves a certain level of discomfort. And our generation doesn't like that. Anytime you start speaking of discomfort, something's wrong. I know that they would have blamed my father for abuse. He put us in the silo, as I've told you a couple of times, when we were 6-7 years old, to throw down silage. And that I'm sure it's a violation of child labor laws today. And it was cold. And it was uncomfortable. It was painful, if you care, to think of it in that way. But it was good for my brother and I when he was 6 and I was 7 and we were in the silo throwing down silage. That level of discomfort was good. Now, I don't know if my father was sitting back and thinking to himself, I need to curb the natural carnality that these boys have and put them to work. I think my father just assumed that this was the way you raise children and it'll turn out all right if you lovingly put pressure on them. It never occurred to me that my dad was being mean. I never thought of that. I just assumed that, oh, he loved me, and if he put me in the silo, and in spite of the pain that was there about throwing down this silage, apparently it was good for me. It's unfortunate that somehow fatherhood in America has gone another direction today. In fact, a loving heart allows the level of discomfort to rise, always with the idea that in the end it will avoid pain later. See? And perhaps we'll talk about that a little bit later on. But that's a major issue when a person has a loving heart. Now, thinking of discipline just a little further, if I were to ask you to number on your paper 1 through 10 and then begin to fill in reasons that people exercise discipline and permit you even to put down the negative ones, what would you put down? I'm going to give you a few to get you started. Some people discipline to punish. That's what they aim to do. And I'm not going to discuss in detail whether these are good or bad. Number two, some discipline to get even. I'll let you decide whether these come from a loving heart or not. Number three, some discipline to vent anger. Number four, some discipline to put down or humiliate. I will stop there for just a moment and say that I think this is one of the most disgusting reasons for discipline to be exercised in the class or outside of the classroom is just strictly to humiliate the person. And I have seen this just a few times. And I react to it. I cannot appreciate it very much. Fifth, some discipline to show authority. I'm thinking of a particular teacher. This is a Christian day school teacher who I know somewhat. And I had a number of parents talk to me about this teacher and in their opinion, the children's opinion, when the children were coming home and talking about this particular teacher, they felt as though discipline was meted out or anger was vented occasionally just because the person loved to be in authority and loved to exercise that authority. So some people do that. I don't know why, but they do. 6, one may be motivated to discipline because he wants to establish control. 7, to intimidate. Some people love to intimidate, I don't know why. 8, to motivate. 9, to produce fear. 10, to break the will. That's what the brother in this article was reacting to, and he was thanking God that his will never got broken. I would love to ask him what he means by that. Because I suspect, or I think, that you agree with me that it is very necessary to train a child and give him the skills, if you want to call it that, to subject his will to another's will. And if he does not learn that, he's in trouble. Now, if you're talking about breaking his will in the sense that you crush his spirit, I agree. But if you're talking about teaching that child how to bring his will under the will of another, oh, I'm sorry. I believe that that is a good thing to be teaching a child. Now, to bring our focus back to this concept of disciplining with a loving heart, or out of a loving heart, I would just like for us to focus our attention on what kind of discipline would be exercised if indeed we have loving hearts. What does it look like? I have seen teachers, and I speak now specifically of teachers because that's where my experience has been, in identical situations, fairly identical, fairly parallel situations, parallel circumstances, parallel people, reacting with the same kind of words. Both of them kind of coming at it from the same approach, but the one being very successful and the other not being successful. And I have oftentimes raised the question in my mind, well, why? Why is teacher A over here, Christian, fine person, not a person that I would be upset with or think that he is evil or anything like that. This teacher A. Over here is teacher B. Teacher A, though, has a struggle with his students. It isn't that he's nasty. It isn't that he's unchristian necessarily, at least not externally. But he has difficulty. Over here is teacher B. And teacher B is very similar in practice, very similar in many respects. But one difference is that when he's in the classroom and he's bringing discipline in various forms to bear upon children, they almost like it, not quite, but they enjoy this classroom and they feel like working for this teacher, and they'll kind of buckle down and do what needs to be done, maybe with a few whimpers, but you get the distinct impression that they're going to do what this teacher wants them to do. Now, what is the difference? I was just in conversation a day or two ago, not with teachers, but with another person who was presenting the same problem. Fine person, but the people around this particular person, again, have a little difficulty relating. And she was asking me, why is this the case? Well, I have said to teachers many times, and most of you who teach here have heard this, first and foremost, you have got to communicate to that student that you are on their side. You're in there, you're digging in, you're going to do whatever needs to be done for them. I have 9 things that I would like to share with you that I think characterize the heart of a person who loves their students. And obviously, or characterizes a person who has a loving heart. For persons who have loving hearts, of course, discipline with a loving heart. Number one, respects others. It's a very, very, very high level of respect. A student does not enjoy being yelled at. A student wants to be respected. People want to be respected. And again, I can't tear this apart with enough nuts and give you enough nuts and bolts to tell you if you don't have respect for others, here's how to get it. I'm just telling you, we need to have that kind of characteristic, or people, students, are not going to detect that we love them. Give them your respect. Don't yell at them. When you call them into the office, if you're an administrator, I always try to sit down and let them talk first. Explain to them what I view as the problem, and then just say to them, how do you see it? And oft times, that gets me off the hook, because once they get done explaining, why, sure, I can see why this person did this or did that or did the other thing. But if I call them in the office and I just sail right into them and find out after 15 minutes down the road, I'm dead wrong. The situation was entirely different than what I thought it was. I'm in trouble. First of all, their level of trust in me goes down, because they have now figured out that what I'm going to do is I'm going to draw all kinds of conclusions ahead of time and even maybe take some action without knowing what's going on. So just the simple fact of drawing them into your experience, whether it's in the office or wherever it is, and just sitting down and say, could you tell me what happened on the playground? Even though the other teacher or somebody else had already told you that this person got angry and kicked somebody in the shins. No, you sit down and you say, would you please explain to me what happened? Being aware that they may slant it their way too, as far as that's concerned. But give them respect, and I just gave you one small aspect of that. Number two borders on a very similar thing, be a communicator. Now, I quickly jump from the classroom to marriage, and my wife is sitting here, so I don't mind saying this. One of the clearest ways, from what I can tell, in the average marriage to make sure that somebody knows that you love them is just to communicate with them. When you stop communication, they wonder what's going on. And it's no different with our students. They want us to talk to them. They want to communicate. And we're busy, I know, and we don't get this done. But a loving heart communicates. And the loving heart that has communicated is in a much better position to discipline somebody than one who has not bothered to do this. Three, a loving heart is slow to anger. Does not flare up just straight off the bat and read the riot act and put everybody in place. I'll never forget, I think it was about the second year I was teaching school. Some of you know Brother John Martin, and I was teaching with John. And John had concluded it was impossible to make me mad, because I don't get angry easily, as most people count it, but I can get angry. And I remember probably the first time that the students saw me angry. I was having a little biology experiment. We had a double period on Fridays, and during that time we were trying to all set up some experiments with plants and so on, and I had the students building little boxes that we were putting dirt in and planting seeds and so on. Well, you teachers who have tried to manage that type of project know how it can go. You have about 10 students or 15 students who are doing this and doing that, and it's easy for a couple of them to get into a little bit of a mess over here. So three of the boys were down at the water spigot over at the church. And I was in the classroom with the rest of the students, and I happened to walk back to the window and saw them as they had their box and things there and trying to get their... Well, no, they weren't doing anything with soil at that time. The box was sitting on the ground, and they had cups of water, and they were just tossing them on each other and really having a time of it. And I don't know, it just hit me the wrong way. And I flipped up the window and I said, you gentlemen come in and sit down right now. And so they came in and they sat down. And I was angry enough to stand at the front of the classroom in a very stern voice say to them, that's it, I've had it. There will be no more biological experimentation done this year. If that's the way you want to do it, forget it. Repented of it 10 minutes later. In fact, but having thought to myself, well, if you said it, then you have to stick by it. But Brother John Martin came to my rescue, and he just, after school, he came into my classroom, and he said rather gently, Brother Melvin, I didn't really know you could get angry, but I'm wondering if you didn't overstep that just a little bit. Are you sure you don't want to have any more, this is in the fall of the year, any more biology experimentation done? Well, I said, I guess not. I mean, I guess I do want to continue with that. And so I changed my mind on it and apologized the next day. I didn't get anywhere with that show of anger. It didn't really produce much at all. I got much further the next day by apologizing and then being careful not to let this kind of anger race out of control again. Okay, a loving heart is slow to anger. Now, mind you, it gets angry. That's why I asked you this question. And I take this from Scripture, because we find God being slow to anger, slow to wrath, but there does come a time when he says, that's enough. And he begins to mete out discipline and judgment. Now, I don't surmise to be God, but from that model, wrongdoing, sin, mischievousness, and all of this does move us toward anger, and if controlled properly, it still is a demonstration of love. Fourth, confronts with sensitivity. And I underline the word confront. This is nothing new to you, I'm just reminding you of it. See, what did Brother Dale say? It doesn't do any good to overlook wrongdoing that is going on in the classroom. A loving heart confronts with sensitivity. And it does not make an apology for that confrontation. If a student is doing wrong, then they ought to be confronted about it. Fifth, a loving heart is fearless. This is one that I need. I don't know how it is with you, but when it comes to this confrontational type of thing or a time when discipline really needs to be exercised, oftentimes we get bottled up in fear. And I was listening with great interest to Brother Eugene as he spoke. I can see how this could become a problem with fear when you're dealing with these people. Now I'm remembering a time just now, and I had a student who was from a foster background and as a result was not supposed to be paddled. And I remember getting into a very difficult situation because I had kind of served an ultimatum, and I don't even remember the issue, but the ultimatum said that, you know, look, if this happens again, I'm going to have to take somebody to task on this issue. And it turned out that two boys got into trouble, and one of them was this youngster. And so I called him down into the basement, and I said, now look, I am a man of my word, and I told you what was going to happen in this case, and I'll assure you it will. However, I have a problem. This gentleman here is a foster child, and I am not permitted to paddle him. And so I was going to give him another form of discipline. And he said to me what very few students have ever said. He said, well, Brother Melvin, would you please paddle me? Why don't you treat me like you treat everybody else? And so I said to him, with a certain amount of trepidation and fear, well, it is true that you need it. And so I think I'm going to do that. And so I proceeded to paddle him anyway. Turns out that that young man is a very fine young man today. And I'm not saying because of that, but it surely didn't hurt him. What if this, and what if that, and what if the other thing, and on and on and on and on. There was another part of me that said, well, if it's right, why not? And so that's what happened in that particular case. Number six, be a good listener. Be a good listener. People who are good listeners have loving hearts. And this calls to mind another case that I ran into in my teaching career that did not turn out so well, in which I am always humiliated every time I think about it. I'm humbled when I think about it. I did not listen well. We had a gentleman in our school who was a real problem. It wasn't, he not only was mischievous, but he also was sinister. A real problem in many respects. And, I labored with him. Other teachers had labored with him and worked, and I don't know what all they did, and they couldn't seem to get anywhere. And he finally came into seventh grade, and I thought, well, here is this young man, and we'll see how this goes. Well, to make a long story short, the thing progressed to a point in which I ran out of options. I didn't know what to do with him. Had tried all of the typical low-level forms of discipline that may be tried, including sending him home, keeping him after school, and all of this. And I thought, well, God, do you want me to paddle this boy? I mean, he's been given enough paddlings before, and all the other teachers said that it never was very effective. But I didn't know what else to do, so the next violation, I paddled him. And I knew the moment I was finished paddling him, it had no effect on him. I could tell. That was just the same hardness, the same glint in his eyes, the same decision that he was going to do what he felt like doing. A couple of weeks later, I don't remember the incident, but we were in the office and I was talking to him and I was asking him to talk. And he said, what bothers me is, he said, is you're just like my dad. And I said, what do you mean? He said, well, you beat me around just like my dad. Oh? I said, well, what do you mean by that? He went on to explain to me how that, I won't go into details, but how that his father was quite abusive. And his father had thrown hammers at him, and his father had thrown screwdrivers at him, and his father had done other things that were even worse. I immediately knew that I had not listened well enough before. You understand? I had not bothered to go into the details of finding out why he was acting in this very sinister way. Beyond mischief, you understand? I had perceived that there was something beyond mischief in this boy's life, but all of a sudden, in those few moments, it came to light what was going on, and that was his father was abusing him physically. And he was coming to our school. Nobody else knew anything about that. In any time that we began to bring pressure to bear upon him, especially if you were going to use a paddle, all that did was brought all of that stuff to his mind. Now, the saving point in this is that he and I still have a good relationship, I believe, until this, to this day. I can sit down and talk with him and talk to him about some very, very serious things. He has not changed much, I am sorry to say. He still is very much that way. I was sad that I had not done better in the situation as it was. However, I believe the saving factor or the difference between his father and myself that I heard him communicate as the next few weeks went by was, well, at least you care about me. In his opinion was his father didn't care, which I don't think was really true, but that's what he was thinking. So be a good listener. They know that you love them if you will listen. Seventh, be vulnerable. Or another word here is be transparent. Don't hide anything from them. Don't even attempt to. Again, when I'm in discussion with a student, I like to ask them, is there any way in which I have been unfair with you? Is there any difficulty that you see? Please be free. Let them know. I'm open. I'm transparent. You can say to me what you want to say. You can ask of me what you want to ask, and I will respond the best I know how. That lets them know that you love them. And you have to communicate this. Eighth, be honest. A loving heart is an honest heart. Speaks for itself. And ninth, the last one that I have in this list, is show appreciation and gratefulness for the person. Show appreciation and gratefulness for the person. You know, the funny thing is I say thank you to my children, my own children, far less than I do a lot of other people. Now, that's strange. It occurred to me that this is going on one day, and I have, of course, attempted to correct this. I don't know why sometimes the people who are the very closest to us, we just take them for granted. Or say thank you to my wife. Some husbands have cultivated the thing of saying thanks for every meal. Now, I do very poorly at this. And it makes me feel bad about myself. why I would take my wife for granted or my children for granted, or for that matter, anybody for granted. I have found it very helpful both for myself and for the people that I'm working with just to sit down occasionally and say thanks for what you're doing. So appreciation and gratefulness. I would like for you to turn to Hebrews chapter 12, where we have comments about the Lord as he goes about the process of chastening. And I'd like to just take a few moments to look at this passage. So I've studied scriptures over the years. I found it very helpful to find these passages where God himself speaks about the way he does, goes about doing things, and then say to myself, well, if I could just do it the way he does it. Let's take a look here. Beginning at verse 5 of chapter 12. And ye have forgotten the exhortation which speaketh unto you as unto children. My son, despise not thou the chastening of the Lord, nor faint when thou art rebuked of him. For whom the Lord loveth, he chasteneth, and scourgeth every son whom he receiveth. If ye endure chastening, God dealeth with you as with sons. For what son is he whom the Father chasteneth not? And if we just stop there for a few moments, we see a very obvious thing that you all know without me saying this. And it's when a loving heart chastens somebody else, in the end, they know that that's love. And if you don't do it, it is eventually communicated as something that is not love. In other words, if I don't do anything to my sons, I just let them do what they want to do. This is not love at all. But if ye be without chastisement, whereof all are partakers, then are ye bastards and not sons. Furthermore, we have had fathers of our flesh which corrected us, and we gave them reverence. Shall we not much rather be in subjection unto the Father of spirits and live? Now notice verse 10. For they verily for a few days chastened us after their own pleasure, inferring that oft times fathers do discipline their children, maybe not for the right reason. But he for our profit, underscore it, but he for our profit, discipline out of a loving heart always aims at this. This is always the aim. What will this profit this child? What good will it do? Do I have in place a plan that is sensible, that will be profitable disciplinary-wise for this child? See? Our fathers, for a few days, chastened us after their own pleasure, but he, for our profit, that's what God does. He introduces blowing up engines and so forth for our profit. That we might be partakers of his holiness. What is the assumption here, or what is the inference? Without this chastening of the Lord, without this chastisement of the Lord, we could not attain to any level of holiness at all. But he introduces this into our lives for our profit. And we do the same for our children, and we do the same for our students. And if you can just get the focus on that, so when the student comes in and complains about the homework, or whatever it may be, you can really come back to base one and understand, for his profit, he needs to do this. For his profit, he ought to do that. For his profit, he needs this. For his profit, and so on. This is the motive that stands behind a loving heart. Sees the child in for their profit, acts, and if it even calls for using the rod, for their profit. If it calls for keeping them after school, for their profit. A student finds out by and by if this is what you have in mind, or if there's some other motive that you are thinking of. Verse 11, now no chastening for the present seemeth to be joyous, but grievous. Nevertheless, afterward it yieldeth the peaceable fruit of righteousness unto them which are exercised thereby. This touches on a point that I had made before. The loving heart has the capability of seeing 40 years down the road, or maybe even just 2 years. Sees beyond the moment and understands that the exercise of discipline now, as the Bible says, will prevent great grief to mom years down the road. Okay? And so, for that person's profit again, you exercise a discipline if you think it's going to be without tears. Oh no. There's discomfort in this. Jesus said one time, or it is said of Jesus in the scripture, that for the joy that was set before him, what he saw out there, he endured the situations that he found himself in. And we, who are responsible for students or for our own children, as we bring discipline to bear upon them, we want to see the peaceable fruits of righteousness spring forth out of their lives, as it says in this passage. I'd like to turn to two other passages in closing. Two very, very familiar passages. You don't even need to turn to them because you'll know them well. Psalm chapter 23, the Shepherd Psalm. And tucked into that passage is a very, very interesting comment about the disciplinary action of the Lord. In Psalm 23, in verse 4, a statement that you know well, thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me. Thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me. What does this say? Well, the psalmist says, look, God's staff, the very fact that he is there to correct me, to discipline me, to stop me from going the wrong direction is a great comfort to me. And by God's grace, this is what we want to communicate to our children and our students. And well, even modern psychologists will say this, a home that is secure, that has enough parameters, and they have all of their fancy words for this, but if they know, children who know where the walls are at, they know where the fences are much more secure than children who do not. That's true in our classrooms. One of the worst things to do as a teacher is to be inconsistent and sporadic in our forms of discipline. That does not produce comfort, but takes away from it. It ought to produce a secure situation, not something that is very insecure. Students need to know that our rod in our staff will comfort them. It will be good for the classroom. It's like I've told my students before, while I know that some of you do not appreciate the rules of the classroom, you would have less appreciation if we didn't have any, because it would just be a dog-eat-dog situation. So thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me. Let's bless our students with a rod and staff that truly comforts. Matthew chapter 11 is the last passage that I would like to look at, verses 28 and 29. Again, a very, very familiar passage, normally used in a revival setting, but I think very applicable. Come unto me, all ye that labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you, and learn of me, for I am meek and lowly in heart, and ye shall find rest unto your souls. For my yoke is easy, and my burden is light. This is what needs to be communicated to students. Now, I'm not Jesus Christ. I'm the teacher in the classroom. classroom, and I'm bringing a yoke to bear upon the students. And as I bring that yoke to bear upon the students, I want them to know that it fits well. They can pull in it. They can rest under my discipline, under my care of them, and they will prosper. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light. So, in conclusion, a loving heart is the absolute necessity if any effective discipline is to occur. If you don't communicate that, I will assure you, all of your discipline will be ineffective. May the Lord bless you with an easy yoke for your children. The Lord bless you.
For the most current Faith Builders recordings, visit ChristianLearning.org. And for more free resources that support teaching and learning, visit the DocForLearning.org.